Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour, and today is Wednesday, March 17th, 2021. It is the 76th day of the year, and as always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered in my over 46 years of doing therapy. These tools are gratefully available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the red and white bullseye, or the link in the upper left-hand corner of most pages, it says Start Here. It'll take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book is a narrative description of the primary tool in this work called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 16 years now to improve the quality of my life, manage my emotions, and turn any negative emotion into an infallible guidance system to help me improve that quality of life and my relationships. You can also download the actual tool itself absolutely free. Just click on the PDF link and download it, print it off, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll be able to see the glowing heart icon. If you click on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app. It contains the Reality Management Worksheet process, an abbreviated version of that process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. If you do that, you can also then download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have called in and either been stepped through the worksheet process or given testimonials about how the application of that process in their lives has been tremendously beneficial, and or they've talked about and asked questions and learned about some of the deeper aspects of how a tool that is as seemingly simple can be as powerfully effective as this tool is. So we encourage people to do that soon and often, because when they do that, they might have a question or a comment. If you do that and you have a question or a comment, give us a call. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And if you call that number and press 1, it'll put a little question mark by your phone number, and I'll announce you by your area code. Today is the 76th day of the year, and we have agreed to do the Course in Miracles lessons from the workbook. I was not here to review yesterday's lesson, which was simply, the light has come, and you are healed, and you can heal, and the light has come. You are saved, and you can save, etc. So today, the lesson simply reads, I am under no laws but God's. I am under no laws but those laws of creation. And the commentary is quite lengthy for today's lesson. And the essence of it is, we have observed before how many senseless things have seemed to you to be the salvation. Each one has imprisoned you with its laws as senseless as itself. You are not bound by these laws. Yet to understand that this is so, you must first realize salvation does not lie there. While you would seek for it in the things that have no meaning, you bind yourself to laws that make no sense. Thus do you seek to move, to prove salvation is where it's not. Today we will be glad that you cannot prove it. For if you could, you would forever seek salvation where it is not, and never find it. The idea for today tells you once again how simple salvation is. Look for it where it waits for you, and there it will be found. Look nowhere else, for it is nowhere else. Think of the freedom in the recognition that you are not bound by all the strange and twisted laws set up to save you. You really think that you would starve unless you have stacks of green paper strips and piles of metal discs. You really think that a small round pellet or some fluid pushed into your veins through a sharpened needle will ward off disease and death. You really think you are alone unless another body is with you. This is insanity that thinks these things. You call them laws and put them under different names in a long catalog of rituals, and these rituals have no use and serve no purpose. You think you must obey the laws of medicine, the laws of economics, the laws of health. Protect the body and you will be saved. These are not laws, but madness. The body is endangered by the mind that hurts itself. The body suffers just in order that the mind will fail to see it as the victim, see that it is the victim of itself. The body's suffering is a mask the mind holds up to hide what really suffers. It would not understand its own enemy, that it attacks itself and wants to die. It is from this that your laws would save the body. It is for this you think you are a body. And today is a Wednesday morning, and that means that last night, Tuesday night, we had a support group. And in that support group, we had one of our members share the story that after our last Tuesday support group, she had a very difficult night, very little sleep, very little rest, and she woke up and her back was, quote, out. She couldn't walk right. She wasn't comfortable sitting down. She wasn't comfortable standing. She spent the next 3 or 4 days not able to function well. Her children had to help her to and from the bathroom. They made her a dinner or two. She had a very, very difficult time with a sensation of physical pain and discomfort. And so we talked about how the vast majority of that kind of back pain is at least aggravated by our mental emotional processing or lack of mental and emotional processing. This is highlighted by the work of Dr. John Sarno. So last night we decided to watch the video of the documentary on Dr. John Sarno's life. And it is exactly what this lesson from A Course in Miracles is just saying to us. We think we have to observe the laws of medicine and the laws of economics and the laws of health and protect the body. But these are not laws. These are madness. The body is only is endangered by the mind that hurts itself. The body suffers just in order that the mind will fail to see it is the victim of itself. Dr. Sarno talks about how when there's an unconscious pain that some part of the mind has decided it needs to hide from itself, the physical pain arises as a distraction. It arises as the displaced energy that has not been resolved. And the mechanism that creates pain in that process is something that Dr. Sarno called tension myoneural syndrome. And with tension myoneural syndrome, his research shows how the slightest reduction in oxygen flow to tissue, as little as 10%, initiates excruciating pain. So when I'm carrying mental and emotional pain and suffering and tension in my body, in my mind, it is reflected in the body's energy system. And if enough of that tension shows up in a muscle group and that muscle group starts to spasm or contract excessively, it can cut off blood flow to tissue. And that's what causes the excruciating pain. Not a ruptured disc, not a pinched nerve, not a broken bone. In the vast majority of cases of chronic physical pain, Dr. Sarno's research revealed, it is a matter of this tension myoneural syndrome, not a matter of an actual torn ligament, broken bone, pinched nerve, etc. But if we believe what the so-called medical experts tell us about these chronic pain syndromes, then we run off to all of their physical treatments, which might include alternating hot and cold, deep tissue massage, stims, electrical stimulation, implanting battery packs in our body to constantly stimulate nerves so that we disrupt the pain signals. And so this lesson wants us to know that is as unproductive as any other false belief in laws outside the laws of the Creator. There are no laws except the laws of God. There are no laws except the laws of creation. This needs repeating over and over again until you realize it applies to everything that you have made in your opposition to what actually is, to the Creator's will. Your magic has no meaning. What it is meant to save does not exist. Your magic is meant to save something that doesn't exist. And only what it is meant to hide will save you. The truth of the flow of life in creation is the only place you'll find salvation. The laws of creation can never be replaced. We will devote today to rejoicing that this is so. It is no longer a truth that we would hide from. We realize instead it is a truth that keeps us free forever. Magical thoughts imprison us. But the way the world actually works makes us free. The light has come because there are no laws but the laws of the flow of creation. We'll begin with longer practice periods today with a short review of the different kinds of laws we have believed we must obey. These would include, for example, the laws of nutrition and immunization and medication and the body's protection in innumerable ways. Think further. You believe in the laws of friendship, of good relationships and reciprocity. Perhaps you even think there are laws which set forth what is God's and what is yours. Many religions have been based on this. They would not save, but they would damn in heaven's name. Yet they are no more strange than other, quote, laws, close quotes, that you hold must be obeyed to make you safe. There are no laws but the laws of creation. Dismiss all foolish magical beliefs today and hold your mind in silent readiness to hear the voice that speaks the truth to you. You will be listening to the one who says there is no loss under the laws of creation. Payment is neither given nor received. Exchange cannot be made. There are no substitutes, and nothing is replaced by something else. Creation's laws forever give and never take. Hear creation, which tells you this, and realize how foolish are the laws you thought upheld the world you thought you saw. And then listen further. It will tell you more. It will tell you about the love of creation and what creation extends to you in each moment. It will tell you about the endless joy that creation offers, about creation's yearning for the fulfillment of its offspring, created as its channel for creation. Let us today open God's channels to Him. Let us open ourselves to the flow of creative energy and let it extend through us. Thus is creation endlessly increased. Its voice will speak to us as well as the joys of fulfillment in that flow of creation, which its laws keep limitless forever. We will repeat today's idea until we have listened and understood. There are no laws but creations. And then we will tell ourselves as a dedication with which the practice period concludes, I am under no laws but creations. We will repeat this dedication as often as possible today, at least 4 or 5 times an hour, as well as in response to any temptation to experience ourselves as being subject to other laws throughout the day. It is our statement of liberty from all danger and all tyranny. It is our acknowledgement that creation is our source and that we are its offspring. Pam Grout has to say a little bit more, a slightly different way in her book, The Course in Miracles Experiment. And her chapter 76 is titled, Crazy Mad Beliefs. She quotes Mark Twain as saying, it's not what you don't know that kills you. It's what you know for sure that just ain't true. Pam writes, if you're a parent, your kids have undoubtedly accused you of TMI. It stands for too much information. Lesson 76, I am under no laws but truth, tells me that not only have I picked up TMI, too much information, but that most of it is TMFI, too much false information. Today I examine the strange and twisted laws to which I feel bound. The Course calls it insanity to believe that I must obey the laws of medicine, of economics, of health. To think I would starve without stacks of green paper strips and piles of metal discs, this is the height of madness. These ridiculous laws play a big role in how I experience life. They're like the kitchen junk drawer filled with a bunch of forgotten items, dried up magic markers, rusty scissors, old birthday cards from people I don't even remember, and keys that probably used to open something, although I'm not sure what. This lesson offers freedom. It asks me to clean out the junk drawer, to examine the mad beliefs that run my life. The list of laws that hold me prisoner is long indeed. I need 8 hours of sleep. Money comes from working hard. It's dangerous to talk to strangers. All of these false beliefs keep me a prisoner. That's why today I repeat in my head, not out loud, I repeat over and over, and especially when confronted with one of those preposterous laws, I repeat, that's not true, and no one can make me believe it. So, that's our offering for today from the Course in Miracles, and a little bit of an offering from our support group last night, in which we watched the documentary that's available for a very nominal fee at the website, all one word, alltherage.com. The DOC, to help you remember this, stands for documentary. alltherage.com. And I think it's $5 or $6 to watch it once. It's like $15 to own it or something. And we watched that, and it was very, very much in line with today's lesson from Course in Miracles, that most of the people who are in chronic pain are in pain because of mental, emotional issues that they are running from, or that they are denying, or that they are unwilling to look at. They are not in pain because of a damaged physical energy system. And yet, with the lack of willingness to look at that mental, emotional disruption, we stay stuck in the physical manifestations of pain. And one of the great contributions to us as people and the medical field, or the treatment of chronic pain, that Dr. John Sarno gave us is the concept of tension myoneural syndrome. And the relief that can be obtained by processing and releasing the negative emotional states or energies that are tied to false beliefs is hard to believe until you've experienced it yourself. It is life-changing, life-saving. In the documentary, they talked about how many people had written and continue to write and talk to Dr. Sarno's daughter and his wife and tell them how Dr. Sarno's work saved their life, changed their life for the better. And Dr. Sarno's work is essentially challenging the false belief that the vast majority of my physical pain is caused by a disruption in the physical energy system. And when I understand how the mind and the body are not separate, and I understand how the pain is a feedback system that will let me know there is a problem, and once I've checked out the best that my society's medical system has to offer to make sure that I don't have a broken bone or a bone cancer or some kind of an internal bleeding or something, once I've checked that out and the pain remains, then I'm free to explore what is the mental emotional connection here that's tied to the production in my energy system of this thing that Dr. Sarno calls tension myoneural syndrome. And when I figure that out and I tap into those emotional issues and I give voice to them or release them, the tension myoneural syndrome releases and comfort is restored. And I sit here talking to you today as someone who has directly benefited from that process, as absurd as it might seem. I know it seemed very absurd to me, and there was a John Stossel, his part of the documentary, and John Stossel, long before the documentary, had done his own investigative news report on Dr. Sarno, because John Stossel was one of the many people who was being treated by the standard allopathic care for chronic back pain. And he had been told for years that he needed to do long, slow stretches and not sit for too long and not stand for too long and spend time on his back with his knees bent, etc., in order to be free of the pain. And when I watched that documentary, I realized that John Stossel was talking about exactly the same stretching routines and mechanisms and alternating hot and cold and deep tissue massage and electrical stim that I had been told I needed to do on a daily basis in order to remain flexible and pain-free. And so I bought Dr. Sarno's DVD and watched it and watched the John Stossel interview again, and it made logical sense to me, and it seemed ridiculous because my pain was so intense and had been for so long, and the only relief was, you know, even though it was temporary and flighty, the only relief I got was when I did these exercises, these stretches, these therapies from the orthopedic, from the physical therapist, from the chiropractor, et cetera. So even after I bought the video and watched it, even after I'd seen John Stossel talking about the relief he'd gotten, it took me more than 3 weeks to be willing to stop doing all of those physical machinations to try to relieve the pain and discomfort, to give up the daily routine of stretching and to instead talk to the pain, talk to the stiffness, talk to my back, and be willing to journal and write and do Michael Rice worksheets on this process rather than turning to the constant physical solutions. And I sit here today more than, I don't know, it's probably closer to 10 years from the time I gave up all of those physical solutions, and I have almost no episodes of my back going out. I have almost no restrictions in motion and physical pain. And when that comes up, as it used to, I address it at the mental-emotional level, and I find resolution within hours, if not within days, whereas it used to be weeks or months. When my back would, quote, go out, I knew I was in for multiple weeks, if not a month or more, of limping around and restricted motion and increased treatments. And it's now been well over 8 years, and I have not done the physical stretching daily. I have not done the alternating hot and cold. I have not done the deep tissue massage. And my physical comfort level is far more my fluidity of motion, my energy level is far better than when I was doing all of those physical treatments for the pain. And when the pain comes up, when the stiffness comes up, when I get a stabbing pain in my back, I know I should do some worksheets. I should do some EFT tapping. I should do some, find somebody who can test my energy system and do NET on it, the neuroemotional technique that uses knowledge of the acupuncture meridians and how those are directly connected to specific emotions. And I figure out what's the issue that's bubbling underneath my conscious awareness that is connected to the tension myoneural syndrome that's creating pain in my back. And with a few worksheets, a few tapping sessions, an NET session, whatever is available at the time, usually within a matter of hours and never more than a day or two, my comfort has been restored to my physical being, to my back. The pain is gone. So our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and there's 28 minutes left to talk. How can we support you today? What's a question or a comment about the lesson for today, which basically mirrors what John Sarno was teaching us, that we create our pain and suffering by trying to believe in laws that aren't true, that create a sense of cause and effect where none exists. And in that, it keeps us from seeing the true cause and effect relationships that drive our experience, our life, our existence. 563-999-3581. Who's got a comment or a question? Who wants to hear a little bit more about today's Course in Miracle lesson or Dr. John Sarno or anything else we've talked about in the past 10 years? Susan, I see your hand up. I'm clicking away.
Yes.
Are you there?
I am. We just had our Zoom group, and the first part of it was spent discussing this miracles lesson. Our group consisted of four of us, Tim Bingham, Susan Bingham, Ellen, who may be listening or not, and Gina Ford, who is a mediator and a virologist. Now, Ellen loved the lesson and understands that such things as supplements and exercise and vaccines are just part of the magic. They're not necessary. And she really gets that. And then we have Gina, who's a brilliant woman, who said, well, but these viruses are, they're entities in themselves, and they love it when somebody refuses the vaccine, for instance. They can go infect and multiply in there and be spread around. And so we had this vigorous conversation. I feel as if I'm straddling while I experience myself in a physical body. I'm taking my supplements and doing my Pilates, and I think John Sarno is right on, but I also, even Byron Katie said if she's in pain, she might take a Tylenol. So I'm a straddler. I wouldn't want to spread this wonderful miracles lesson around too much in this particular time, because so many of us are counting on lots of people taking that vaccine to get us back to some kind of an open economy and functioning society, and we're all believing in the efficacy of the vaccine. So there's the full range of my confusion right here, and I'd love to hear you talk about the dilemma of, you know, I love it when Pam Grout said that adage, we need 8 hours of sleep. That's been a curse for me. It was very liberating to read this morning. I get 5 hours of sleep, six maybe. On a great night, I get 7 hours of sleep. I never get 8 hours of sleep, and I feel really good. But I've always thought, I need 8 hours, and if I don't, I'm going to die young and not be healthy, and I'll get diseases and all this junk. So it's a wonderful lesson, but I'm applying it in a healthy way and a not healthy way right now. Okay, I'll stop talking, and if you could say something about that, I would love it.
Okay, well, one point to clarify that popped up for me is when you brought in Byron Katie's work. And there's nothing in Dr. Sarno's work that says the pain that Byron Katie had with Fuchs dystrophy is caused by tension myoneural syndrome. He wouldn't say that at all. And if somebody came to him and they had, you know, a fracture in their spine and, you know, bone alignment that's about to cut a nerve off, or they had cancer in their back, he wouldn't say, oh, this is tension myoneural syndrome. He'd say, okay, here, get to the oncologist and get to the orthopedic surgeon and let's get this corrected. But when he finds through the scans that there's nothing in the scan, and with, you know, Byron Katie's work with Fuchs dystrophy, they can see deterioration of the cornea. They can see the thing that's causing the pain.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not the same. You know, we're not talking apples and oranges there when we talk about we don't do anything for our physical body.
Okay.
And the other thing, we've talked about this before, you and I and Dr. Rice has been, you know, tapped into this. And what if everything is energy? And Michael Rice says, yeah, you know, we're going to have a party in the 4949 or whatever it is. And, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years from now, because you're an energy system and energy is infinite. And okay, let's just say that's actually true. But in the meantime, before you have the ability to walk on water or drink an entire glass of poison and not feel any effects, you might want to eat some healthy food and take some vitamins. And when you've got pain, you might want a painkiller to, you know, keep your system balanced enough so you can think clearly and do the next right thing. So when you reach that point of perfect enlightenment, feel free to pretend you don't have any physical effects on your body.
Mm-hmm.
But until then, it makes really good sense for most of us to question things and try them out rather
mm-hmm.
than just blindly adhering to what we've always been taught. And as far as this goes, anybody who wants to take this and say, okay, they're saying you don't have to believe in immunizations and inoculations and you don't have to believe in viruses. Okay, but watch where that gets you. I mean, one of the things that I try and do with this work, and I try and mention it on a regular basis on the internet show and in the support groups, is let's stick to something that can be productive for us as individuals today. Even last night at one point in the group, I said, okay, enough of the talk about global issues and the global, you know, medical professions and drug companies. Let's talk about what might be beneficial to the people on the call tonight.
Mm.
Right? And at this level of scale, when I'm in a culture where the medical profession has been completely overwhelmed at different points in time by the number of people who are infected with and have serious complications from coronavirus. So much so that, you know, they're running out of beds to treat people with the more severe cases, et cetera. I don't want to be somebody who's going to ignore that level of reality at this level of scale, because I don't have the ability to wave a magic wand and make everybody healthy or to provide extra beds or to have a miracle cure for people who are on a ventilator. So until I can do any of that, I'm going to use the best information I've got and rely on the medical professionals that study those things and do the best things they recommend toward the end of, you know, what you were saying, getting the economy back online, trying to restore some level of normalcy to our ability to be with friends and family. And what we're talking about here with Course in Miracles is some of these higher level spiritual teachings, some of the highest level spiritual
yeah.
teaching. It's just like when we talk
mm-hmm.
about with Byron Katie's work. I am not suggesting that any one of us should be just like Byron Katie in terms of being able to say, I love everything. And yet, at another level of scale, it would probably benefit any of us who tried to use the tools that Byron Katie found to help us question any painful thoughts we have. Does that mean we're going to be able to do it and have the shift in perception that Byron Katie did? No. That kind of shift in perception, I think you and Ellen were talking on the show not too long ago about how that's kind of a gift that comes to us unbidden. That's not something we earn by being sincere enough in our prayer or being a good enough little boy or girl, et cetera. It's just a gift when we get a shift in an enlightenment and clarity. And we can still use the tools that might help us see those, the benefits or the fruits of those shifts. We can use those tools as often as we're willing. It doesn't mean I'm instantly going to be transformed and become an enlightened being once and forever. But, wow, you know what? When I was stuck in this negative thought pattern and I picked up the worksheet process and did a few worksheets and found tremendous relief, I was really glad I did that work. It really made a difference in my life for that day, that week, that month. So my short answer would be results-oriented. Do what works for you. And if it works for you to be in denial and say, nothing can hurt me and I'm not a physical body and there's no need for me to take a vitamin or eat any food or drink any water, if that works for you and you end up being healthy and happier, then fine.
That's
but
great.
If you're not at that point, then do what does work.
Good. That's great. Yes, I know you've been over this before. I needed to hear it again, and I hope other people on the show needed to hear it again. This is very helpful.
Yeah, it's for me, it's not about the politics, and it's not about my personal freedoms. Everybody can choose for themselves, and it is about the impact on our culture. There are many, many people who are they're going to have a long, hard haul to recover from the adjustments that these job losses and restrictions of movement and financial deficits are, that they are experiencing these days. And if there's anything I can do in my participation in the culture that makes that easier, that eases that up, I do that. You know, ever since this began, even though I'm not one who makes a lot of money, I have been donating every month to the food pantry in the Northern Illinois area, because I learned years ago when we were looking for a charity for one of my business networking groups, I learned about the food pantry, and I learned about how if we donate money to them, they know what's really needed, and they have buying power that I can't match as a human, as an individual. And if I donate, you know, $10 to them, they can buy $80 worth of food. Not only that, they can buy the food that they know in their pantry most often is that they're short of, that people want the most. And the item, whether it's, you know, the diapers for the kids or the toilet paper for the household, et cetera, they can buy it at a greater discount because they buy in bulk and they know what to buy to be of most use for my neighbors who may not be as fortunate as I am financially.
Mm.
So things like that, things like wearing a mask, things like staying in and only going from my home to my work, setting up my office so people can have sessions through video. All of these things are things I do, and I wouldn't do any of them if I read this lesson and decided I'm going to take it literally and say, oh, there is no such thing as a virus and I'm not going to be affected by that. Mm-hmm. That, to my mind, would be the ego, the rigidity of the ego trying to pretend that what's actual isn't actual.
Mm-hmm.
Because at one level of scale, as Guy Finley would talk about it, I can understand that I'm a spiritual being having a physical experience. And at another level of scale, I'm a human being in a physical society interacting with other physical bodies, and what I say and do has consequences.
Right.
And I don't think it is disingenuous to be aware of those facts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. I have one friend who's I have worked with her before, and she came on the radio show a couple of times ages ago, who told me that she's not taking the vaccine because she knows she is not going to get the virus, and she knows she is not going to be a carrier of it, so she's not endangering anyone else because she does a certain kind of energy work with herself and a certain kind of meditation that has convinced her that she is just
immune.
She's immune, and she gave me a series of numbers to recite, and I even said it to music, which makes me smile, but it's my way of being able to remember them. A sequence of numbers that if it's the number of the coronavirus, and if you repeat the numbers seven times, three times a day for 14 days or something like that, you too will be immune.
Well, talk about magic.
Yeah, I know. But still,
what do you think Course in Miracles would say about that?
That's very interesting that they would say something. Well, what do you think?
Right now, just what would you think Course in Miracles would say about your belief that if you say a certain series of numbers seven times in a row, X number of times a day, that it's going to protect you from a coronavirus? What do you think Course in Miracles and this lesson particularly would say about that?
I would say it's one of those laws that's baloney.
It's the magic that it's warning us about in the commentary of this lesson.
Mm-hmm. Wow, so interesting.
So it's just different form of the magical thinking. And it's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay. Right. But I'm not suggesting that you spend any time or energy trying to change your friend's opinion about that. I'm just trying to help you see that if you want to look at what the Course in Miracles is pointing us towards, it applies in all of these arenas. So do what's practical for you, do what brings you comfort. Do what's in concert with or in harmony with the people you live with or the culture that you live within, and hold loving thoughts, connect to your awareness of your connection to your source through the whole thing. That's the real message in this lesson for me is choose to focus on your true nature as love and your connection to that creative force. Refuse to be distracted from that.
I'm with you.
This lesson doesn't say do this or do that. This lesson says watch your false thoughts and beliefs. Watch the tension that arises when you buy into those laws. watch what happens in your energy system when you understand you are under no laws but love. Love's laws, the laws of creation. Watch what happens mm-hmm. when you identify and release the negative thoughts that you pour so much energy into, which create everything we're talking about, everything that Dr. John Sarno talks about with attention to my own neural syndrome. You know, Course in Miracles lesson for me today is just saying, watch what you do when you believe in something less than love. Watch how it creates fear, tension, anger, pain inside of you. And if you watch it and you see that it's unproductive, then feel free to try something else. So, that would be my input.
That's excellent input. Very helpful for me is the internal reaction, the level of upset. That's the thing that could take
that's
you
your
to
guidance
the
system.
Every single time. Yeah.
Yeah, that's your guidance system. That way you don't have to listen to Dr. Tim, and you don't have to listen to Michael Rice, and you don't have to listen to Dr. John Sarno. You just listen to your internal guidance system, which is infallible.
Mm-hmm.
And depending upon where or when or how you read about it, you might hear something like, you know, it's a latent neural structure implanted in you by God that's there to break off the effects of your errors in thought and guide you to truth and happiness if you ask it to. It will not override mm-hmm. your choice. So, questions, comments, reactions?
You got another hand up?
I would let you know if I did. We have 7 minutes okay. left or thereabouts.
Okay. Another question then. I saw that Sarno film and I read the book, but this is a long time ago and I should get it again. The idea that if oxygen is lacking somewhere, probably due to thought processes that result in tension in the body or something, and I'm sort of filling in the blank here because I'm not sure I understand that. I would love to know how, I mean, there are two approaches, of course, just breathing, tapping, and doing, the other approach would be doing the work. I have this chronically sore left arm, 3 years worth of sore left arm. I'm seeing an energy chiropractor who works very gently. I've been doing worksheets. I had a session with Michael 2 days ago that was very intense, and during it, my arm started to hurt really badly. And it doesn't hurt if I'm not moving it generally, but it began to ache. And the aching lasted for a day, and now the aching's gone away. But my question is, I feel as if I need some guidance into finding a way further into getting the oxygen in the arm, finding a way to do the healing. It hasn't happened yet. I've been doing the work, but obviously not doing it enough or right.
Well, you know, there's a part in the movie, in the documentary, and this is also a part of the actual clinical educational segment that Dr. Sarno would do in his office, where he says to people, you know, do this work and don't do all the physical jumping up and down and pretending, or not pretending, but convincing your mind that this is a physical problem. Do the journaling, do the talking to your body, et cetera. And if that doesn't work, see a therapist who's specifically trained in helping you uncover the unconscious dynamics that are most likely driving the tension myoneural syndrome. So you might need that. You might be one of those people, he says, are about 5% of the people in his experience that need work with a psychologist or a therapist that is specifically trained in helping people uncover the deeper emotional unconscious things that basically, you know, the best working definition that I have for the unconscious is it's the part of my consciousness that a fearful part of my mind does not want me to see. It thinks it's being protective. It thinks that I don't have the capacity to survive it or to understand it or to cope with it. So there is nothing except my consciousness. And there are parts of my consciousness that I'm willing to see and parts that I'm not willing to see. So especially if those parts of my consciousness that I'm turning away from, that I'm not willing to see, if they are related to traumas that I've downloaded those belief systems as an interaction with things that I considered traumatic in my life, I might need, in quotes, I might hold off looking at those things until I've got a therapeutic relationship with somebody so I feel supported, I feel strengthened, I feel safe in looking at things in my mind, in my memory, in my belief system, in my interpretations of life that have been labeled by me as too dangerous to look at, too overwhelming, too upsetting, too scary, too rageful, too painful. And you might be in one of those positions where whatever energy is stuck in the arm or somewhere in the energy system between the spine and the arm where it's reducing function and creating the tension myoneural syndrome, which we experience as pain, the energy that's in there, that's your mental emotional energy, might be related to some traumas that you have convinced yourself are too much for you to look at individually, in which case you could, you know, enlist the help of somebody who's specifically trained to help you uncover the deeper unconscious, in other words, the deeper experiences you've had that you've labeled as too much for you to deal with. And that could be Michael, and that could be Jeannie, and that could be, you know, anybody who will be willing to support you in doing the worksheets, as long as you're, you know, if you're trying to apply the Dr. Sarno work and his awareness of tension myoneural syndrome, understand that the more you do the things related to physical manipulation and changing of physical energies, the more you're convincing your mind that the pain you're feeling has a physical cause rather than the mental emotional cause. And right. It will just help you keep distracting yourself from the mental emotional work that Dr. Sarno would say is going to be the only long-term solution to your tension myoneural syndrome.
You do that work too? You didn't mention yourself, but you do, don't you?
Yeah, we do it on the internet show every time we do a worksheet. We do it in the support groups. Yes. Yeah, it isn't any different than the work you'd be doing with Michael when you know, normally when your arm is resting, you don't have any pain, and then you're working with Michael, and all of a sudden your arm starts hurting. That's what you know at that moment is you're close to something that's related to what's causing the tension myoneural syndrome, and it's stirred it up again.
Yeah.
So you're right on track.
Well, Okay. Well, that was 2 days ago, and I have done work on it, worksheets. I'm not getting to where I need to go, though, I don't think, unless it's just going to take longer and I should just keep going. I guess I want it.
All right. Well, that's probably the most useful approach right now. Right?
Yeah.
Insisting that you be done sooner than you're done is probably not going to be useful.
Okay, I know it's 1 o'clock. So, thanks so much,
yeah,
Dr.
it is.
Kim.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the call and the questions and comments. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. So, welcome to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Wednesday, March 17th, 2021. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And I'm going to go ahead and turn on 541 while we're waiting on Michael to get in. Who do I have? 541, you're on the air. Area code 541.
Is that me?
Yes, it is you. Oh. Hi, how are you?
Well, I'm
did you not mean to press?
I had my hand up for Dr. Tim, and he I guess, or even maybe didn't notice. But that's okay. I'll call him back tomorrow. And meanwhile, I could give a report on my eye. This is Julie from Ashland, Oregon.
Yes, please do. And,
well, it's really interesting. It was a really interesting operation, and it didn't hurt, and it was simple, and for me it was. And I can see better. It's really weird. I noticed that if I close my weaker eye, that everything looks brighter white, kind of like when you have a phone screen that's more of the blue light, and then you put the filter on and it's more yellow, and my other eye is more yellow. So I asked the doctor, you know, is that a sign that my eye is adapting to aging and the yellow is helping me see better? And he said, yeah, kind of. But then ultimately they even can get darker and darker and darker. So then that impairs your vision. And I said, well, was my lens that you removed yellow? And he said, yes. You know, so it's real interesting. And he says, now I'm seeing the pure color that I had to use. You know.
Huh.
True,
well, that's interesting to know.
Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, I survived and everything's good. And I'm thinking of listening to some guidance inside me. Well, I am. I'm hearing guidance inside me that's moving me towards possibly running for a local office, like maybe on the school board.
Good for you.
I know. Yeah, I'm not sure if it's time. Maybe I need to explore it first, but the deadline's tomorrow, so I don't know. But I might, because I just need my message out in the pamphlet, you know, and then whether I win or not is another story.
Exactly. Yeah, I this was years and years and years ago. I ran for a city alderman to be on the city council and lost by like 800 votes or something. You know, but it was definitely an experience to get out and meet people and introduce myself. And, you know, it's a big opportunity to meet other people. Just be safe getting out there now. We didn't have COVID back then.
Well, I don't have any fear.
Yeah. Well, good for you. Well, I'm glad that it went so well for you.
Yeah, everything's good. If you have other people, I really haven't got much to say, but thank you for all the support for seeing me. Yeah.
Awesome. All right, hon. Take care. Well, welcome, Michael. We do have a couple hands up. And I'm not sure if you're on yet. You're on the board, but I'm not hearing you. Okay, awesome.
I am here loud and clear. Great. If we got hands up, let's go for it. We didn't get to the book yesterday, and it'll be okay if we don't get to it again today because there's so much conversation. Let's go for it.
Awesome. Okay, the first one's area code 314. You're on the air. Who do we have?
Hello, Jeannie and Michael. It's Doug.
Welcome, Doug. Glad to hear your voice.
Yeah, good to hear you both as well. Not sure where to start here.
Well, take a breath.
Oh, go for anywhere.
I'm calling because, well, I really enjoyed the show yesterday. I thought that the work that was going on the show was extraordinary and absolutely just wonderful. And I realized that process of that it was bringing up some things for me, and that well,
are you breathing, Doug?
Yeah, well, intermittently. since then, and since a brief conversation with you yesterday, I have been going further into what it means to me. And so initially, I thought that perhaps it might be useful to throw in a little bit of a caution or a little bit of a note of awareness about the fact that sometimes when two people are processing something and doing forgiveness process and freeing up energy in their energy systems, that it allows their energy to flow up higher in their energy system and maybe awakens their heart. And at that point, two people can wake up, have an awakening as they remove and forgive other old things that have kept them from being alive. And then they look out and the first thing they see is one another, and they think, oh, I maybe I'm in love with this person. That may not be the case. They're just waking up to the love that's in them. And it seemed like the discussion we were having yesterday that might be something worth noting, as one of the individuals was a married person, and I don't know the status of the other, but as I thought about that, I don't know how relevant that is to the equation at all, but as I've thought about this more and more, I've realized that really this is, of course, as always, more about myself. And I actually have a similar, I could go on and on. I can talk forever. So I don't want to do that too much here, but the short side of it is that I've been having a lot of challenges in my relationship and feeling like a lot of the needs that I have wanted to have met are we're having difficulty meeting one another's needs. And that a couple of months ago, I had a conversation with a friend of mine who is of the opposite sex. And I felt like during the course of that conversation, I really, really feel like this is meeting some emotional needs of mine. And recently I've been listening to a counselor who says and puts out a big caution about any people who are in a relationship or in a marriage. He's more focused on marriage, but I don't make a lot of distinctions there if it's a committed relationship. With meeting any emotional needs with anyone outside of your primary partner, that's a dangerous thing to do, to allow emotional needs to get met.
Wow.
Yeah.
Giant thought disorder for me.
Okay. Well, that's certainly a valid way to look at it, you know, and I was considering, even as we had the conversation yesterday, there's no question that we would want to let this forgiveness perfect opportunity move through and move to its maximum zenith of possibility here. But what if there also is some level of caution or, you know, concern, because maybe there are even suppressed parts of one or both of these people who are attracted to one another. And if we don't admit that also, then that can drive some unconscious behavior as well. And so I think that
right.
I see the value of this counselor's caution. You know, he's not saying don't ever meet any emotional needs, but he's saying be very careful about getting into relationships with members of the opposite sex if you're in a committed or married relationship that meet your needs that you're not getting met with your primary partner, because you might find yourself on a slippery slope there. And I think that there's some validity there, but I'm also very interested in your immediate response to what a thought disorder there. And I've also, you know, even as a yesterday, I'm thinking, well, yeah, but here is a perfect opportunity for a lot of needs to be met in a way that is a very constructive and powerful forgiveness process to be activated due to the resonant frequencies present here and the willingness of both persons. And the main thing is just having the full awakeness of all of these things that I've discussed so far. So I'll stop right there.
Okay. So my take would be, what a load of pressure you put on a partner to say, you're the only one that can meet any emotional need that I have. I mean, talk about a tall order. You know, we were put on the planet with 7.5 billion people. And I think it's a giant error to think that one person could even start to meet all of our emotional needs. So, but what I hear him doing is putting a danger sign on an effect instead of discipline. Remember, our word discipline comes from disciple, which means properly taught. If we properly teach a person that if they're in a committed relationship, that means that the only place that they go for intimacy in their lives is to that committed relationship. And so to me, the piece of teaching that needs to be done, and you've been there when I've done it. You've been there when I've taught the energy field work at Heartland in our Why Is This Happening to Me Again intensive. And I'm really crisp and clear with people. You know, you're going to put your hands on people as they're in process, and you're going to put hands in places that are relatively intimate, not sexual, but intimate. So first order of business is get your mind right. Make sure that you're really clear. If you are, quote unquote, a therapist, or you're just a support person with another person, that you are there totally clean, crisp, and clear, and you are supporting them, and you are integrity with your own sexuality. In other words, when you start working on people, you never go near them sexually. It's just verboten. It's a taboo. You just don't do that. And when, as you say, a piece of healing happens and a new level of love arrives in someone's mind and body, if they don't understand what's going on, then it's easy to transfer that, oh, this new level of love is because of you. I opened my eyes. You're the first person I see. Now I'm in love. And the kind of pressure that people in that circumstance can put on people is enormous. That's why in all of the helping professions, you know, there's a big focus on Catholic priests, but I don't care if it's Baptist ministers or lawyers or doctors or whoever. Anyway, instead of facilitate healing, if the person who touches into a new level of their own being doesn't know that that's what's happening, there's a great temptation to think, oh, I'm in love. And the kind of pressure, and that love wants to express sexually. And so there can be a tremendous amount of pressure on that helping professional to engage in sexuality. And you know, it isn't age-related. I think back about 30 years ago, I was working with a woman who was in her early 80s, and she was sure she was in love with me, and she was sure that she wanted me in her bed. It's like, excuse me, that's not what's happening. That's not where we're going. Not even possible. But to me, the core teaching that needs to be done there is once I'm in a commitment, the only thought, the only place I allow my mind to go is in the direction of that commitment. So if I'm the helping professional, there's only one place I go, is into support. And if this person wants to come on sexually, and I've seen cases where it can get pretty nasty, where if you don't respond sexually with that person, then it becomes their rejection, and you become the object of their hostility. So there are a lot of manipulations that can occur there. But beyond, and so that's one aspect of it. Beyond that, if I've got someone that I'm in a relationship with and I'm in a totally committed relationship with that person, then for me, integrity means that in thought, word, action, or appearance, the only place I go with any kind of intimate thought in my mind is to that relationship in which I'm committed. So in the circumstance we were talking about yesterday, and certainly I hear your thoughts, and it's a place for discipline. It's a place for proper teaching. And so to recognize, you know, for the man in that situation who potentially was going to be support for the healing of some sexual abuse for the woman we were processing with yesterday, you know, if I were having a conversation with him, I'd say, and let's make sure that you're in 100% integrity. You know, maybe there's some attraction in this relationship, and maybe someday there'll be some kind of relationship there, but you're a married man, and the only place your mind goes for intimacy is to your marriage. You don't even, you know, we live in a culture. In fact, I've worked with people who've had therapists tell them, well, you know, if your spouse doesn't turn you on anymore, quote unquote, which means I've hooked some form of hostility or fear up to my brain's image of my spouse internally, and that interferes with, quote unquote, me getting turned on, I have a problem. I need to clean that up. And this therapist told this person, well, you know, you just think about, you know, if you're attracted to the latest movie star, whatever, you can just think about while you're in bed with them and replace it. It's like, to me, that's like 2,000% out of integrity. You know, not only with what one does with one's genitals is a marriage commitment important, what one does with one's mind is where the first violation takes place. There will never be a genital violation in outside of a marriage, in regard to a marriage, without the mind going there first. So to me, the first order of business would be to get clear with what we're doing with our minds. And, you know, I was brought up, and this is my confession, I was brought up in a culture that said, you know, anything you can get, you go for it. That's, you know, that was just kind of like, well, that's what real men do. And as I started doing this work, I realized how crazy that was, how out of integrity it is with our own energy fields and the energy fields of others. And so for me, I developed a tool that you maybe heard me talk about before, and that is, if my mind wants to wander because the brain cells I have, what I was programmed with as a male in this culture is, well, it's okay. You can look, but you better not touch. My offering is, no, you can't even look. You just don't. You avert your eyes. You don't even go there. Thank you very much. I'm not interested in what you may have to offer as a sexual object. Thank you very much. I am already in a committed, total 100% relationship. So if that triggers something in brain cells that has me going in that direction, for me, what I did, and I don't have to do that anymore, there was a time when I did, is then I'll take that energy and turn it back to the intimacy and the appreciation I have for my relationship, which gives me a chance to clean up another part of my mind. So that would be kind of be my take on it all. And, you know, if you remember in the responsibility communication tool, we have the healing process and we have the problem-solving process. What I hear the therapist saying of, that's dangerous, I don't think it's dangerous at all. I think there's a potential danger in it that we can warn people about, but to categorically say that's dangerous, it's like, stop. There's an area there that might require some healing, and what I hear him doing, if your understanding is correct and my understanding of your understanding is correct, what I hear him doing is wanting to do some problem solving rather than addressing the real issue. And to me, we always want to go back to cause and deal with the real issue. Clean up the mind, clean up the mind, clean up the mind, then clean up the mind. Does that fit? Does that make sense?
It, and I have myself assessed that his work is based on problem solving, and it seems to be very successful for a lot of people, but he focuses on problem solving in my mind. I do not hear discussions about healing in his conversations. I hear extremely skilled work in problem solving that brings people back to one another and seems to be effective in many cases. And I think that, so, you know, there's just various levels that we approach something from, and each one has its limitations often. And I feel like that's a very, everything you said is very sound and supportive, and it's easy when one is in a distressful situation like myself to start reaching for things and thinking, well, maybe that's the way for me to solve my problem. You know, it's like to just focus on the problem solving aspect of it at that level. And I feel like there is room in what you said And that was my concern, the valid part of my concern. I mean, there's really two issues here. It's like, what, if anything, needed to be added to the conversation yesterday? And how does this and what does it evoke in me that's about my issues? And so what I would say about the conversation yesterday is, just being that we know nothing about the man or where he's coming from in truth, that it might be appropriate to offer up a cautionary bit of energy about some of the things you just spoke about, so that the woman involved knows all of that and in some way can test her fears and make sure there's a solid footing there for her before going into more deep and intimate healing process with someone. So I will take this conversation further, because my own process has gone farther in that I've looked at and been really examining how, for me, there has been, through the course of my life, a driving force of interest to have a deep, intimate, spiritual, physical, mental, emotional relationship with women my entire life. That has been...
Was that... Question. Was that plural or singular?
It is... It has been singular in any given time frame, but there has been a plurality of connections in my life in the quest for creating this, quote, image in my mind of an ideal relationship that is intimate in those four dimensions, and finding satisfaction in that for periods of time with more than one woman. And then finding myself, the place that I'm at right now is that I don't want to take a geographical cure. You know, there's been a pattern in my life of having a satisfactory relationship and then finding it to become less satisfactory for one reason or another, and then deciding, Yeah, certainly.
So my offering is, the relationship has not become less satisfying. My offering would be, or at least my, I'll call it an educated guess, would be that through the vitality and intimacy in that relationship, you've reached a new level of opportunity to heal, and that it's probably brought something up for you that you'd rather take a geographic cure from. I don't want to go with this. Don't make me look at this. But, you know, in the Healing Through Relationships workshop, you've been there when I've said, you know, I used to teach healing your relationships because I used to think there was such a thing as a diseased relationship. And then I discovered there's no such thing. Every relationship is a perfect creation, and it's diseased people in relationships that need to heal. And it's through their relationship interaction that they will heal. And one of the main messages of the non-being mind is, don't make me look at that in my life. You better shut up. You better be quiet. You better go away, because if you make me look here, I'm going to have to deal with this, and I don't want to deal with this. And that's, to me, usually the motivator behind the geographic cure, whether the geographic cure is playing footsie with somebody else at the office or, you know, the bar or whatever it is. It's, there's something in me that I really don't want to look at. And my relationship has become so vital that it is taking me to that level where I have to look.
Well, I find great value in what you just said. And I feel like one of the things that my mind wants to do is tell me that things that it wants to say, often that can be valid. And maybe it was always valid in my case, and I'm not going to try and make a statement on whether or not it was at this point, but I'm going to say that sometimes maybe it isn't entirely valid, or the other person's response has something to do with what's happening. And I don't have the answer to that question entirely in my particular case.
I've got one.
What I've been... All right, let's have it.
So my offering would be, the way you can tell whether it's her or you is am I experiencing some sort of dissatisfaction while I am functioning and experiencing my life and this relationship out of a space of fully conscious, active, present love? If I am, there is a slight chance it might be her fault. But if I'm feeling, experiencing, my perceptual constructs around the relationship are coming from some form of hostility, fear, or dissatisfaction, it's all about me. It's my work to do. If it's my fist that's clenching, even though I can say, I'm clenching my fist because you just said that, or did this, or didn't do that, because you didn't fulfill a goal, that's why my fist is. No. I loaded a goal in my mind for her. She didn't fulfill that goal for me. And me loading that goal in my mind is showing me some part of my mind based in hostility or fear, and that's my forgiveness work. So if you are full blast, conscious, active, present love, physiologically feeling it in your structure, and you could say, something off about this relationship, maybe it's time to take the geographic cure. But until you get to that, it's your work. And when you get to that, that whole other question is going to dissolve. That would be my offering.
One of the things, Michael, that's valuable, everything, of course, always in our conversations are extremely valuable. And I'm, without question, going to be listening to this and working with it for some time. But one of the things Before I dive into evaluating my response to what you just said, I want to say that one of the things that has come to my awareness is that the desire itself for comprehensive intimacy, mental, spiritual, and physical and emotional, that I've had driving my life, the very fact that I use the word driving my life suggest to me that there's a non-being component to that, that it's being driven out of non-being content. And that's the greater awakening.
Nice catch.
For me to, pardon me?
Catch.
Yes. And so that is what I really need to look at, because I feel like the very fact that that's so important to me, it's such a rewarding thing, such an important thing, such a overriding goal that it would demand sacrificing all kinds of things in my life and maybe, relationships in the past with women and whatever. You know, it's like that's the thing that my mind is trying to hide from me, is like, it's like I need to understand what that's about. And I feel like
my offering.
Yeah.
When you say that's what I need to understand, remember in the codependence work, the number one pseudo solution of the non-being mind is if I could just figure this out.
Figure it out. Yeah, figure it out.
And my offering is you're never going to figure it out. But you can forgive it,
which is perfectly fine. That's the goal. And I do wonder if there's a difference between understand and figure out. Sometimes I think that sometimes there might be, but I don't. We could hammer that out. I don't know if that's the point right now either. But I feel like healing it, to recognize that it's there, that there's something in me that is creating a driven mind, is the best way I can say it, towards having that in my life to feel whole, satisfied, happy, rewarded, and like I'm on purpose, is something I really need to look at carefully. I offer up that I feel like there.
You know when you're going to have that?
When I'm going to have that?
That
what
whole thing
said?
That you just described? Yeah. You know when you're going to have that?
When I'm active present love or what? I don't know. Go ahead.
When you show up as that.
When I show up as that. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I have a question, which is it, what I'm asking my own mind, I think that I have discovered that there is a non-being component to my being that's driving me in that direction that I need to heal and forgive. And then secondary to that, I ask myself, is there any validity to the story that I've told myself, which is that is truly part of my purpose, that having that kind of relationship is a fulfilling part of my purpose, and therefore there's a valid aspect to that drive as well. And those get mixed up in my mind and being, I think, at this point, because, and probably will until and unless I feel all of the non-being component aspect of it. But so I'm...
For me, the difference in that's going to be, am I driven or inspired?
Great.
There's a guy who wrote a book two years ago called The Purpose-Driven Mind. It's like, thank you, I'm not a cow, I don't need to be driven. But if I'm connected to being, I'm going to be inspired to create whatever it is I need to create. I'm going to be inspired to do the work that I need to do. I'm going to be inspired to show up as present love, not driven to do it.
I'm on that threshold of trying to sort that out for myself from another direction as well right now. I'm really aware of that. That's just been up for me. It's like I want my life to be an inspired life. I want it to have purpose, but be driven not driven by anything, but be flowing out of inspiration, exactly as you're saying. And the complication for me right now is I feel like a lot of times both of those elements can be present at the same time. It's like I think that there is an inspiration in me for that, and I also think that's probably a driven component in me for that. So there's being and non-being content both pushing me.
And where
the
driven is, that's where your worksheets are.
Okay. Sometimes it's hard for me to sort out which is which, and that's the journey that I'm on right now. You know, it's trying to sort that out for myself. And then at first, you know, the first thing is to admit it's there. You know, that's what I think has come up for me in the last 24 hours since yesterday's show. It's just thinking about all this and saying, yeah, it is. it is.
Absolutely.
So there's a whole lot of work here already for me, and I don't need to dominate the show, but I could keep going easily if you want.
Well, we're on the topic, and our commitment is to who's on the show with us, so you're here right now. Let's go for it.
All right. So concerning my relationship now, what I feel greatly distressed, all right? I have a lot of non-being pain up, a lot of distress and concern up, because I feel like for the last 3 to 5 years, there's been a great deal of dissatisfaction, and I've chosen to stay believing that there is value in this relationship, and that my healing and the highest amount of growth I can get is going to be obtained by not going back to my old patterns and by staying. And yet there has been a tremendous opportunity cost to the degree that we are not meeting one another's needs. Both of us have suffered tremendously. We're in a very difficult place because of what I would say, in my opinion, has been that non-being content in both of us has been getting in the way of our ability to meet one another's needs and to enjoy one another and be the presence of love as and for one another in this relationship. And I feel like, of course, I can see her part of it, but not my own so well, which is always the pattern. And for me, what I'm saying in the earlier part of this conversation is part of what I'm seeing about my part in the pattern. And then there's the form that it has taken is that she is choosing, well, it's complicated, and I don't know that we have time for all that. I guess the thing is, when it just feels like to me, so many things are not one thing. You know, it's like the fact of the matter is, there's been tremendous loss and suffering for both of us while we are attempting to stay together while we are so unable to meet one another's needs in so many ways. And so there's been a lot of suffering and a lot of opportunity cost, because life is short, and perhaps we could be finding that or aspects of that with someone else, both of us. And the challenge
is... We're moving into the arena of, my offering would be to work on doing a lot of figuring it out. And so at this point, what I'd offer is, I hear that each of you have been suffering.
Pardon me?
Go ahead and say back what you just said.
Yeah, I need you to do that as well. But what I said was, so you're saying that my mind right now is moving into the area of trying to figure it out. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. And my offering would be, I hear that both of you have done suffering. Now, here's a question that I guarantee that if I had both of you sitting here and you were really honest and told the truth, you'd both say yes to the question. And that is, this form of suffering that your mind is putting into your interaction in this relationship, if you go back to the day before you met this person, did you know that quality of suffering? Absolute 100% she's going to say yes. And if I say to Doug, before you ever met this woman, this quality of suffering that you think you have to, it has something to do with your interaction, your relationship with her, did you know that quality of suffering before you ever met her? Your answer is going to be yes. And when I say it over and over again, this thing of denial, because it is such a key piece of the puzzle. Remember our definition of denial. When I think or speak as though something outside of me is the cause of something inside of me, I have to dissociate from the cause of what's happening inside of me. I have to hide it from myself. And when I hide it from myself, this person that I'm blaming it on or attributing it to, or however my language goes, they are going to resonate that part of me that I've dissociated from. So here I am with the dissociated pain part of my mind that I'm hiding from myself, and I literally construct a perception of her out of that dissociated content. If she's doing the same thing, I've got so much suffering in this relationship and it's because of the relationship, then she's in denial, dissociated from her suffering, and you become the trigger for that dissociated content. So here she stands building her picture of you out of the dissociated suffering in her mind, you building your picture of her out of the dissociated suffering in your mind, and each believing the picture your mind is presenting. And the picture is a lie. That's why forgiveness is such an important component. And forgiveness is when I look at the goal that I hold. Well, all I wanted to do in order for me to be satisfied in this relationship is for you to, whatever it is. Let's say, you know, it's a big issue in the world. I just wanted you to be more sexual with me. So if that were the statement, and I'm just using that as an example, not that I have any knowledge of what's going on for you guys, because I don't, but if that were it, then what you just said with that statement is, in my file on sexuality, there's a great deal of suffering. And so now I project it into my brain's image of my relationship with her. And vice versa. When I cancel the goal for that intimacy, that physical intimacy, I get to collapse my perceptual construct that contains my dissociated suffering projected into my brain's image of her. And when that collapses, it collapses in on itself, and it gives me direct access to the root of the dissociated root of my suffering. And when that comes forward in the presence of love, then that begins to dissolve. Now, one half of the work is forgiveness. The other half of the work is strengthening your connectedness to and the presence of love. Ginny was breathing me a week and a half or so ago, and I was working through an issue. And what became, you know, it was like, you know, here I am, through this, I'm going through this, I'm going to work through this. And it's like, what the visual that I got, the answer that I got was, oh, from my non-being mind, every piece of work that needs to be done is knocked down, drag out, difficult, hard. And then, in that, and I was in still point, I was breathing away, Jeannie's doing energy field work on me, and right at that moment where I'm seeing how hard it is to work through, it was like the next breath opened a still point, and in rushed this presence of love, or probably more accurately, it probably didn't rush, and it was there the whole time. My awareness of that presence of love opened. And all of a sudden, that whole thing I was struggling through was like evaporated. And the message was, if I can bring, in the old language, God in, if I can rely, if I can actually put my reliance on God, not in the old religious sense, but that the presence of love is there, that working through these issues is delight, it's joy, it's easy, it's like, whew, gone. And we have to do both sides of the equation to keep a balance. You know, somebody who's going to do love, 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 everything's love, everybody's love, 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 but never goes in and looks at their own dissociated mind, just so heavenly is to be of no earthly use. And then somebody who goes overboard into, well, I do 87 worksheets a day and I'm going to forgive everything, but they don't bring forward or spend time, make time in their lives to be with and cultivate relationship with love, then the pendulum swung too far in the other direction. It takes both. And the willingness to really take a breath, soften everything in you, and bring love into the presence of this suffering you're talking about, to open the dissociated mind, the veil of the temple that locks that suffering away in hiding until it shows up in your brain's image of her. And of course, I'm offering the same piece of information to her. I'm offering the same piece of information to myself and anybody else that's listening. That's the dilemma. And that's the piece of work I need to do. Because literally, the instant I just entertain the slightest thought, I'm experiencing this because of this relationship or because of her or because of the circumstance or because of, there's no because for any suffering you've ever experienced except that there's suffering in you. And when you put a because on it, you create a projection, and then your mind tells you all you have to do is resolve that projection. Then everything will be okay. That's a lie. You don't need to resolve that projection. You need to bring active present love to your suffering so that your suffering dissolves.
So based on this, in my mind, the suffering behind my compelling need to have these four qualities, but I'll just comprise a short version of deep intimacy and
your goals
is probably the root cause of my pain in this situation because
probably. You can take the probably out.
Okay.
It's a given fact.
And given that's the case, see, I find myself finding that suffering resonated, you know, because I'm not getting that, you know, I'm not getting that because I feel that she's withdrawing from me and she's withdrawing from
me out of
her
pain. Because you have
a
goal, because you have a goal for her to do something and she's not fulfilling that goal. And it's your loading that goal in your mind that uses your dissociated suffering to build your brain's image of her.
Yes, the goal
That's why canceling the goal is so important.
The goal is that she be this partner to me, you know, that she engage in kind of four-dimensional intimacy with me. And
yeah, if you'd only do what I want you to do, everything in my life would be wonderful. And, you know, the reason it wasn't wonderful before I met you is because the person I was with before, if only they'd have done everything that I wanted to, then my life could have been wonderful. And the person before that and the person before that. And if you don't ever resolve it, it'll be the next person and the next person and the next person.
And for her, it's that I'm not providing the kind of income and making the financial contribution at the level that she wants. I think that that would be primary. And I feel
right.
like, and so these two things create a spiraling dynamic of separation
yep.
between us, because, you know, it's just like, I just.
Would you be willing to change one thought in that statement? When you
well,
say these things create a spiraling dynamic of separation, would you be willing to entertain? Oh, hold on. I don't want to get too far away from the thought. Would you be willing to entertain just changing that language slightly to, if I would stop, rather than if it, because that's dissociation, that's denial. I'm the one who puts this dynamic between us. From my side. She, good breath. There's the one you want. She's the one that puts the dynamic between you in her mind. And her forgiveness of that and your forgiveness of your dynamic is what's going to open the space for conscious, active, present love to flood the space and flush out all suffering. But as long as the suffering stays in the dissociated mind, how do I keep my suffering in the dissociated mind? I say to myself, if only he would do this, then I could be happy. If only she, no, if only I would collapse my projection that it's about something outside of me, then I'd touch into the place and be able to presence love for that suffering place inside of me, and I would dissolve all suffering. You know, it's like everybody wants a conflict-free relationship, but they haul this bag into their relationship of the unresolved conflict from my relationship as a kid, my power person dynamic with my mother, my power person dynamic with my father, my power person with my big brother who was a big bully, my power person dynamic with my little sister who always got all the attention, my power person dynamic with that first girl I went to, you know, school with and fell in love with and she spurned me, and my, you know, the only way you get to have a conflict-free relationship is to become a conflict-free being. And that's the work. And then you are the presence of compassion and love for whatever's going on in your world.
Yeah, and I think in that state of mind, one would accurately be able to answer the question of art if, you know, I keep moving forward, but I do want to emphasize.
Yeah.
I'm going to come back to this also over and over, and there's immense value in what you just said. Huge, 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 huge value for me. And it's the pivotal point. It's like manna from heaven. All right. This is the truth. And I feel like if one does what you just said, then anything and everything that really does need to be resolved, like if in fact the geographical differences in where our homes are or what, you know, other circumstances of our incompatibility, or if we're not really right for one another fully, or if we can't really fly to where we need to go together, then that will become clear and we'll be able to lovingly and in clarity know that. Or if in fact we can and are able to achieve that together, what we want to do, then we'll be able to do it. Would that be a reasonable statement?
My offering would be that the ego is offering you a lot of wiggle room.
Okay.
So
I don't
so
get any.
For me, yeah. For me, the first order of business would be is rather than, well, you see, now, okay, we'll move that all the way. Then we'll figure it out. Then we'll know. Like, my offering would be no. My offering here is, I'm going to show up in this conversation, in this relationship, as conscious, active, present love. And when she, you, whichever one we're talking to, gives me the look, and it brings up something less than that presence of conscious act of present love, I'm going to forgive. I'm going to remove that which is less than conscious act of present love in me.
Would we conclude from this line of thought that there is no way that anyone you're with is just the right person always going to be? I hear what you're saying about wiggle room. I don't want that. Is there a place in life where, given all the considerations, you're just better off doing some other path? Or is it always
the
state?
My takeaway is that that's a standard that each person has to measure for themselves. I can't answer that for anybody. Of course, everyone has a right to say at some point, this isn't for me anymore. I'm out of here. Everybody has the right to say that. And that's something that each person has to measure for themselves. But here's my take. Until you can do that from a space of total physiological, conscious, active, present love, your mind's lying to you about the decision you're making to leave. And
right, and it is
that happens.
Decision.
And if you leave, just make sure you keep doing your work around what needs to be resolved, or you'll have to go out and recreate the whole thing with somebody else again. Gets old after
right.
a while.
And it is a decision to leave in that case, not a choice.
I would say it is a decision, yes.
So you're being driven by your non-being content. Until and unless you get to the place you say, when it could be a choice. Maybe.
Yeah. You know, if you take the commitment, as Lyons says, and the reason I put that line in there, you know, that commitment is my personal code structure for relationship. It's what I choose to live and bring forward into my world and offer to other people as a model. The line, I'm here for you and with you, keeping communication open and keeping love conscious, active, and present, came from, for me, My game, my dynamic was, well, you know, if you're going to do what I want you to do, I'm out of here. I'm leaving. And I realized that in order to create a real relationship, leaving had to be off the table. So I took it off the table. And I found that to be only 100% beneficial to me. Because being doesn't leave. Because in being, the truth is, there's only one of us. So for me, I took that off the table. That's what that line went into the commitment for, because my pattern was to just leave. And I realized that was getting me nowhere fast, at least nowhere in terms of creating a real relationship. And when you realize that the work to be done is, you know, if you're the early adopter, I don't know, maybe you've got people in your family system, mom, dad, grandma, grandpa on either side, great-grandpa, great-grandma, who were really into the real work and were doing their work and real honest to God, forgive us. Maybe they were there. I personally haven't met anybody that's got that in their ancestry yet.
Right.
I personally have observed, like I actually remember one minister that I knew. It's like, yeah, well, both my parents were in the ministry and their parents were on one side at least, their parents were in the ministry, you know. And so, you know, we've been doing this work of Jesus for a long time. It's like, yeah, okay. So why do you suppose you're in such rage with your spouse right now? And they were in a ministry that was all talk, but there were no tools. There was no how-to. If you're the early adopter, And I say this from experience. I'm the early adopter at my family system. And doing some of this work of the generations has been hell. But when you become the early adopter, you're saying, and I don't know if you're on the show when I shared it a couple of weeks ago, but I had a space where I was asked in Stillpoint if I was willing to embrace and process anything that had ever been locked in bone in my bloodline. And I said, yes, of course I am. And then I was shown what that meant. And it was so huge and so overwhelming. It was so huge when I literally saw what had gone on in my generations, what kind of suffering was there. And it was beyond the size of the universe. How am I going to do that? And I realized that there was only one way I could do that. And that was if I really, truly developed a relationship with conscious, active, present love. With the Creator. And I really, truly let that presence in. And what happens when we, and I'm just speaking from my own experience, this is what my experience has been, whether it's somebody else's or not. When I am able to do that, the ability of my mind to generate perceptual constructs a la my family system, to replicate those, that collapses. And now I'm in the space where I'm just processing, not the terrible thing that happened when I was four and my father did this, or the horrible thing that happened when I was, or the. The mind, in that powerful presence of active love, the mind stops generating perceptual constructs, and now it's just processing directly the raw energy beneath it. And
say that again, that last sentence, please, again. When what happens, it stops.
When I really, truly trust and let in the full physiological presence of love.
Okay.
My experience in this particular experience was, and I've been seeing more and more of it since, is that when I'm truly in that presence, my mind, just like in forgiveness, only it's like a mass, it's not just this one event. I cancel the goal for him to do this and bang, that perception collapses. But in that space, the ability of my mind to generate perceptual constructs based in generational patterns, that ability is gone. And now I'm just processing the raw disintegrative energy underneath it. So I'm not processing this issue. I've bypassed. It's kind of like the near life experience where somebody goes into clinical death and the body's mind shuts up. And now it's just processing whatever energies are there. And I can start to move things in mass from my generations. And on that note, we're down to the last few seconds, so this conversation probably needs to continue tomorrow if that works for you, because in just a few seconds, the phone's going to cut us off. So I'm going to say thank you for your deep willingness and your thinking about this, Doug, and moving the conversation forward for everybody, because I'm sure this has been a valuable conversation with absolutely everybody, and including myself. Everybody, have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world, and blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.